Hello everybody, welcome to the Boxing Science Podcast. In this episode, I'm going to be answering your questions that you've been firing over social media. It's great to do these Q&A sessions because it gives me the chance to answer a range of different topics, from pre-workout supplements for boxing, to super maximal training, to seeing whether an athlete is overtrained. And we're going to be answering all these, and it's going to be around about 30 to 45 minute podcasts. This podcast is sponsored by Saga Fitness. Saga Fitness are experts, world-leading experts in blood flow restriction training. The smart wearable technology offers a safe and effective way on how to perform blood flow restriction training. We use blood flow restriction training at Boxing Science to help increase strength and hypertrophy, whilst also rehabbing from injuries. We use the upper and lower body cuffs, and you can save 10% discount by visiting the Saga Fitness store today and using the Boxing Science discount code. Just simply type in Boxing Science and you can save 10% discount on their upper and lower limb cuffs, as well as their upper and lower limb bundle. So the first question received is from Liam Daly, and it's, should fighters take pre-workout before a session or before a bout? Now, this is obviously an answer for our nutritionist, Lee Rickards of Boxing Science _ Nutrition. And also, he's got a YouTube video on supplements for boxing. So go and check that out as well. In terms of pre-workout, there's only a few ones that we'd recommend. The first one would be caffeine, because caffeine is the gold standard for pre-workout. And obviously, it's a safe and batch tested way. And the way that we ingest caffeine, there's a few different ways. We can either have a black coffee, have a caffeine pill such as like Pro Plus, or we suggest to have a caffeine gum. A caffeine gum is basically what you pop into your mouth, chew for about 10 minutes, and it gives you two kicks based on the perceptory glands at the back of the mouth. It can send signals to the brain within 5 minutes. And also it gives you another kick when the caffeine is ingested and digested, into the stomach around about 40 minutes as well. So you get a lot more bang for your buck by having caffeine gum. Other pre-workouts would be like carbohydrate energy gels and also collagen shots to make sure that our athletes' ligaments and tendons and bone health are safe during boxing and during training as well. So when we talk about having supplements just before a bout, you've got to be quite careful with this and make sure that you are having the same supplements that you have during training. You've got to trial and test it to see whether it works for you. It's not a one-size-fits-all approach. With all the boxers that we work with, we have like a bit of a trial run of the carbohydrate loading and supplement loading in their final spars just before a fight to make sure that they're not doing anything new on fight night. Let's say if you're not a good responder to caffeine, you know, it's quite well known and researched that caffeine can help elevate your heart rate, and too much caffeine can actually make people feel anxious. And put that on top of pre-fight nerves, this is something that a lot of boxers won't want to have. So if you're fine with caffeine and it doesn't make you feel anxious or increase your heart rate too much, then have it part of your sparring to see how it goes first before having it for a bout. But yeah, you've got to just make sure that it works for you. Don't just think, right, listen to the Boxing Science podcast, they say to have caffeine before a bout, having caffeine gum, and just try it just on the night of the bout. Make sure that you're having a practice run just before. But like I said, if you want to find out anything more about nutrition and supplements for boxing, give my good friend Lee Rickards a shout on Instagram, boxingscience_nutrition, and go and check out the supplements for boxing YouTube video on the Boxing Science YouTube channel. So I've got a question from William Watson. How do you find out whether you are overtrained? Now, a lot of people use the term overtrained, overtraining, overtraining syndrome. And actually in the data and in the research, it's very, very difficult to become overtrained. The terminology is overreach. So overtraining is where an athlete can end up being quite ill. This might be acutely ill or chronically ill as well, chronically fatigued. So using the term overtraining, you know, we try and avoid at Boxing Science. What we say is overreaching or being fatigued during training camp. And there's a few different ways that you can test whether an athlete is overreaching. Some of this comes at a cost, so it might be quite confusing. Stuff like heart rate variability or using aura rings and stuff like that. And this can be quite daunting. However, at Boxing Science, we use some quite simple and straightforward ways on how to monitor our athletes on a day-to-day basis. The first one being session day wellness. We get them to score a rating of 1 to 5 on their energy levels, sleep quality, muscle soreness, and their readiness to train. And this is a rating from 1 to 5. And we can look at the overall score from these four scales. And also we can see what is causing that low score, whether it's sleep quality, whether it's muscle soreness. And then we can make some adjustments to their training. We compare that to their average as well. So there's some athletes that'll be 5 out of 5 and really positive and wanting to train. And there'll be some athletes that are around about a 3 or 3.5 out of 5 on a daily basis. So if they hit 3 or maybe a 2.5, they're just quite close out from their standard deviation. Whereas like if an athlete was hitting 2 and they're normally putting 5, then we'd do something about it. So yeah, it's very individualized to each athlete, but it gives you a good indication of how your athlete is feeling on a day-to-day basis. We can also use jump assessments. So we use counter movement jump, squat jump. We use RSI as well. And if an athlete is within 5% of what they're normally hitting, we think that's okay. If they're reduced performance by 5%, we may take a step back from that session. So we might reduce the loads or might just do mobility or not push them too hard on the conditioning, might swap their high intensity interval training for an active recovery session. Also, if an athlete is finding it quite hard to hit the red zone, so the heart rate isn't responding to the speeds and intensity and the rate of perceived exertion that an athlete is giving, that's a sign of overtraining. So if an athlete is hitting the same speeds as they were the week before, not hitting above 90% the heart rate, or the heart rate significantly reduced, but their RPE is about a 9 or 10 out of 10, that shows that athlete is slightly overreached and maybe need to cut the session short or give them a few days off or something like that. I'm sorry that I can't give you a true black and white answer. It's not a one size fits all approach, but hopefully it's given you a few different ideas on how to monitor your athlete's wellness, their performance, and also see whether they're overreaching during training camp. Okay, so I've got a good question from Albert Pejo, and he refers to one of the athletes I'm working with down here at the Boxing Science Performance Centre, and that certain someone is Florian Marcoux. So he's asked, what do you think about Florian Marcoux? Is he getting better working with you? So obviously I'm going to say yes, but in all honesty, he's absolutely flying. It's some of the biggest improvements and increases in performance that I've seen over the first camp at Boxing Science. So he's been working with me for about 10 weeks now. He's improved his counter movement drum and RSI by 20%. His lactate profile on speed, like 16 kilometers an hour, is reduced his lactate by 40%, so it's more efficient, producing less lactate at the same speed, making sure that he is more efficient at high intensities. His movement's fantastic, but this has all come from Florian putting 100% in to each rep. It'd be a little bit of an injustice if I said putting everything into each session. Florian wants to beat his scores every single time. It's very data driven. So if we say that he's hit 52 centimeters on the counter movement jump the week before, he'll try his hardest to hit 53, 54. And this continual feedback and this continual improvement has just been building blocks throughout the week. So this shows the importance of giving that instant feedback during each session to make sure you're creating them building blocks throughout the training camp rather than doing a pre-test and then a post-test and not seeing whether an athlete is improving during the camp. It makes sure that every rep, like I say, is optimal, every set is optimal, and building these blocks all the way through the training camp. So every single week is improved by 1 or 2%. And this is equated to across all the tests, anywhere between 10 and 20% improvements on his strength, speed and power, and especially on his fitness as well. So he's going to be boxing Friday, April 2nd. And I'm looking forward to seeing his development. Of course, he's been working with Grant Smith at Steel City Gym and hearing good things about how he's working out in terms of like his technical performance, his sparring. So the full package, I think Florian is going to be putting on a show on April 2nd. So yeah, it's been great working with him and I'm looking forward to the next camp and building on the success of the first one. Okay, so I got a good question from Shaw Bell, and this is around whether we'd want to work in any other combat sports such as MMA, kickboxing, Muay Thai, and how, if we did, how would we approach it? So first of all, we are open to be working with other different combat sports. We have done before. We've got a good relationship with Southend Combat Academy. They come up with kickboxers and Muay Thai athletes. We've got Simon Herbert, who's a K1 kickboxer. We've worked with MMA athletes before as well. And we are very interested in working with different sports. But we have concentrated on boxing science and not really tried to delve into different sports as in like sub-branding. Let's say we have combat sports science or MMA science or anything like that. And the reason why is because our expertise are in boxing, our passion is in boxing, and we want to give that enough passion and enough kind of attention for boxing science to grow. If, as soon as we start going into different sports and wanting to websites or content around different sports, then our work has been diluted. Another thing that I wanted to say around this topic is when you are starting out a specialist sports science or strength conditioning service, you got to think about your location. Boxing is massive in Sheffield and around South Yorkshire. We have, I think on like some sort of data collection, they found out that we were the third biggest city in the UK for boxing in terms of boxing clubs to people ratio or participants to people ratio. I think the top one was Liverpool, second was Hull, and then third Sheffield. So with that as well, we have the EIS, we have different things around boxing. No, boxing is massive in Sheffield. It's got a huge history, obviously, with the Ingle Gym, with many different fighters. And then from there, a lot of different gyms opened up around the city. And we've got some really reputable coaches and coaches that we work with. And I was actually thinking the other day that we only work with a handful of professionals that are from the local area. The rest come from different areas. For example, Jordan Gill from Chatteris, got Sultan from Kazakhstan, and they're all coming from different areas to train with the coaches around this area. So we're in the prime location for boxing science. So when we're looking at going into MMA, MMA isn't really that big in Sheffield. So the core foundation of our business is working with the athletes that come into here on a daily basis. If we wanted to go into MMA, we'd have to like literally look to Manchester and Liverpool and Birmingham, which are the biggest places for MMA. Like in Sheffield, it's not that big. So yeah, that's probably been a stumbling block for the reason why we haven't got into MMA, but we are open to be working with different MMA athletes, and how we would approach that is the same way as we did with boxing science. We're talking to other people that are working within the industry, so we'd probably talk to people at UFC Performance Institute, or if we're working in Muay Thai, working with people, talking to people that are working in that them kind of combat sports, looking at the sports science research. If there isn't that much sports science research, we do our own. Do the testing batteries, same way that we started boxing science, seeing what are the physical characteristics of these athletes, what they're really good at and what they need to improve on, and then just getting an idea of the culture, you know, how they manage their training loads, how often do they train, what's the sparring like, what's sparring activity like, so strikes per minute and everything like that. Also looking at how they make weight, what are the ways that they cutting weight throughout the week, throughout a camp. You know, what is a typical kind of weight that they come back at during training camp? How many times do they compete? All these things, we've got to create a massive needs analysis to have a look at the general landscape. Then obviously looking at the individual characteristics of fighters as well. So hopefully that's answered your question. Just to summarise, we would be open to working with different sports. Probably the reason why we haven't is because we're not wanting to dilute the work that we do with boxing science, and also location plays a big factor. And if we were to work in different sports such as MMA, Muay Thai, kickboxing, we'd create a massive needs analysis of the sport, look at the individuals working within that sport, and immerse ourselves in their environment to make sure that we are applying our strength conditioning methods and our sports science methods in the best way possible. So I got a fantastic question from Alex Alvey, who participated in our Ultimate Coaching for Combat Sports workshops. Our next workshop is coming in May. It's 21st and 22nd of May, hosted here at the Boxing Science Performance Centre, just outside Sheffield in the UK. If you are wanting to gain more insight into the boxing science training methods, we cover a range of different subjects, from movement training, core training, plyometrics, strength training for boxing, and our conditioning methods as well. It's a mix between theory and practical workshops, and it'll give you the tools to start implementing the boxing science training methods into your training environment. If you're wanting to find out more about the Ultimate Coaching for Combat Sports workshop, please visit the Boxing Science website, or you can fire over any questions to us on Instagram at Boxing Science or at Wilson_Boxing Science. So the question from Alex Alvey is, how to use supermaximal training? You know, when do we use it and why do we use it? So supermaximal training is either partial range lifts or overloaded eccentrics. Overloaded eccentrics is something that we don't particularly use with our athletes on a camp-by-camp basis. The reasons why is it creates a lot of soreness. This can affect their boxing training, and also it can be a stimulus for muscular hypertrophy. This is something that we don't want because we're in a weight category sport. So we use partial range lifts such as trap bar deadlift from blocks, Anderson squats, so squatting from the pins from a half squat or quarter squat position, or like a racked press. And the reason why we use this is to overload the athlete's one rep max. So we can work anywhere between 100% to 120% of an athlete's one rep max because they're going under a less range of motion. This means that they'll be able to lift more weight. And the reason why we want to do this with boxers is because we found that on a load velocity profile, that an athlete, most boxers are more accustomed to high velocity, low loads rather than low velocity and high loads. So they struggle towards this back end of the curve where it's like high force, high loaded movements. And the reason why is because of their strength training history. Maybe they've done a lot of speed work or circuit training, lack of exposure to maximum strength training, limitations in their postural stability and their movement patterns. And this can affect the amount of load that they can lift. So during a squat or trap bar deadlift. So our initial goal is to improve maximum strength, build up the foundational movements and foundational strength, develop max strength through the full range movements. And then when we see like kind of that performance stagnating through the full range compound lifts, we start using partial range lifts to start overloading an athlete to truly unlock their maximum strength. And we've seen some massive gains in this. We've seen like athletes that have been on the program for 3 to 4 years still making 10 and 15% increases in maximum strength performance. So we find it a very, very useful tool. Now, we only use this with advanced athletes because I feel that you need to have the postural stability, that awareness to be able to get the most out of this exercise. So for example, an athlete that is just starting the program, they might not have that trunk strength, the postural stability to be able to overload trap bar deadlift and withstand that movement, and that can lead to potential injuries and also can limit the amount of load lifted as well. So when to use super maximal training, we normally use this part of a maximum strength block. This normally starts anywhere between 10 and 8 weeks out from a fight and can finish between 6 and 4 weeks out from a fight. Normally, we look to try and do strength speed towards 6 weeks out from a fight. So we normally start doing maximum strength training 10 weeks out. Now, this doesn't mean that super maximal training can't be used closer to a fight, as we can also use it as part of complex and contrast training methods. So complex and contrast training methods are when you pair a maximum strength exercise with an explosive exercise after a period of rest. So for example, you'd use a trap bar deadlift, use trap bar deadlift on blocks, wait a minute or 2 minutes, and then you'd perform the counter movement jump. And what you're likely to see is anywhere between a 2 and 5% increase in that counter movement jump height. And this is due to potentiating factors from the heavy lift and using partial range lifts during contrast training and complex training is a fantastic method because you're reducing the eccentric load, reducing the tension on the range of motion. So it's reducing the fatiguing responses from a maximal voluntary contraction. And reduction of the fatiguing responses will help increase the potentiating responses, which can then transfer into a faster and more powerful performance on the explosive action. So for example, the counter movement jump, a med ball throw, a broad jump, a sprint, anything like that. So that's the way that we use super maximal training. We either use it as part of max strength blocks between 10 and 6 weeks out from a fight, or you can use it as part of strength speed blocks where you're pairing it up with, when you're pairing it up with explosive exercise for contrast or complex training protocol, and that can be anywhere from 6 weeks out to even 3 weeks out from a fight. So yeah, that's the way that we use super maximal training, and we're going to be covering more of this on the Boxing Science Conference on April 1st to the April 3rd. Okay, so I've got a fantastic question from Callum O'Sullivan. Do you prefer working with elite athletes to gain the 1% improvements or the lower level athletes to get more progress? And this is not just a black and white answer. It's going to be quite diverse and I might end up rambling on and going a few different avenues here. But at Boxing Science, I'm quite fortunate to be working with a huge range of athletes. And that's what I love about Boxing Science, because we work with world champions and the very pinnacle of the sport, all the way down to people having the first bout, working with youth athletes as well. And both are really, really important to us. Now, working with elite athletes is really important to Boxing Science. And the reason why is because the methods that we have are world class. I'm very confident in saying that. We've been running this for, been working in boxing for 10 years now, been running Boxing Science for 8 years, and I'm very confident in saying that our methods are fitted for world-class performance. So to really, really test our training methods and to make the most of our training methods, we need it to be transferring to the world scene. Also, it's important for our business and for sports science in boxing in general, that the top athletes are seen to be working with Boxing Science, but also working in sports science. And the reason why is because it filters through and filters a message through to the rest of the boxing community. You know, Anthony Joshua's done wonders for strength and conditioning and sports science in boxing. The very public nature of his Instagram channel and the stuff that you see on Sky Sports and on YouTube as well, is always doing strength conditioning, and this will have inspired many different youth amateurs to then do strength and conditioning themselves. And this has happened in loads of different sports. When you see Cristiano Ronaldo looking after his body for all them years, this has had a huge impact on how younger footballers start using strength and conditioning and sports science methodology. I remember when I worked in England Golf, there was a huge precedence on the way that Rory McIlroy was doing strength and conditioning and the way that Tiger Woods does weight training as well. These were some of the first people to do strength and conditioning and weight training for golf. And this is important for boxing science because we want to be seen working with some of the biggest names in the sport, because this enhances our reputation with younger athletes coming through. I still get asked questions about the work that I did with Kell Brook 6 years ago. I only worked with him for one 10-week camp, and people still ask me about that now. People ask me about the work that I do with Terry Harper, with Jordan Gill, with Lerone Richards, and they take a huge interest in that. But they never ask me about the work that I've done at the Amateur Boxing Club, working at down at Sheffield City, ABC, working with all these different athletes for so many years. They look at the athletes that I'm working with that are on the TV and winning world championships. So it's really important because we enhance our reputation for boxing science, and then that filters through to the great work that we can do at a youth level. And it's really important for us at boxing science to have an impact on youth amateurs, because we want to have an impact on the sport. We want to build a different type of training culture, different kinds of approaches towards strength and conditioning, to make sure that our world-class methods can be adapted into any kind of training environment and can be utilized by amateur boxing coaches and amateur boxers themselves. And as well, when you're saying about gaining the 1% in the elite athletes, we've seen bigger improvements. We've seen like 10-20% improvements in Florian Marcoux, who's going towards world title level, something that I mentioned earlier on in the podcast. Lerone Richards, he was already British and Commonwealth champion, training for a European title fight. He was making massive improvements and physical improvements as well, like looking at his body composition, people are seeing the differences. Obviously, Terry Harper working at world level, you know, massive differences there. So even though working at elite level and maybe looking at the 1%, you can actually, through consistent training and hard work and dedication, can actually get big improvements from that. So I just love working with everyone, basically. I should have just said that at the start and saved you 5 or 10 minutes of your time listening to me ramble on. But yeah, I think it's really important for us to be working with elite athletes as this filters through the rest of the sport, and also working at the bottom end, working with the grassroots to make sure that youth amateurs are matching up their technical development with their athletic development. So making sure they're getting stronger, moving better, getting faster, building fantastic physical foundation for them to become better boxers and better athletes and help unlock their boxing potential. So that's a great way to finish the podcast. Thank you very much for listening or watching on YouTube. If you're not a subscriber yet to our YouTube channel or the podcast channel, please hit the subscribe button. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please let us know by submitting a rating. Hopefully it's going to be 5 stars. And also let us know what you think of the podcast. Give us some feedback. It's something that we're investing a lot of time into now, and we want to make sure that we get it right for you. So if you are wanting us to cover a certain topic or get a certain guest on, or you have a burning question yourself for one of these Q&A sessions, please leave that in the comment box below on the YouTube channel or in the feedback form on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Thank you very much for taking part in this podcast. I hopefully see you on the next episode.